This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A blast could be heard the moment Israeli airstrike hit a house in a Gaza City suburb Sunday. That strike killed at least one Palestinian, wounded several others, according to Palestinian medics. The cameraman who filmed the video told Reuters that the Israeli army had notified residents of a possible strike in the area. The Israeli army said that it struck around 30 Hamas terrorist targets in the previous 24 hours, including military structures, anti-tank missile launch posts, and weapons storage facilities. The Pentagon says that U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has ordered a guided missile submarine to the Middle East and is telling the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier strike group to sail more quickly to the area. The move comes as the U.S. and other allies push for Israel and Hamas to achieve a ceasefire agreement that could calm soaring tensions in the region following the assassination of a Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran and a senior Hezbollah commander in Beirut. Officials in the Russian city of Kursk said on Sunday damage caused by debris from a Ukrainian missile injured at least 13 people.
Russia imposed a sweeping security regime in three border regions on Saturday, while its ally Belarus sent more troops to its border with Ukraine. In the city of Kursk, footage showed a damaged nine-story apartment building on fire. It was not clear whether there was further damage from the destroyed Ukrainian missile. Meanwhile, Russia's defense ministry said on Sunday it had destroyed 14 Ukrainian drones and four tactical ballistic missiles overnight over the Kursk region. Additionally, 18 drones were said to have been destroyed over other Russian regions that Ukraine frequently attacks.
Reuters, Alice Rizzo. This is VOA News. The U.S. has announced a submarine to move to the Middle East again. Amid the Iran and Israel tensions, a rare public announcement. VOA's Joe Ramsey reporting.
More than 40 families of victims of an airliner crash in Brazil were seen on Sunday at a morgue in hotels in Sao Paulo as three French government investigators arrived in the country. Forensics experts are working to identify the remains of the 62 people killed in the crash on Friday. Local authorities say the bodies of the pilot and co-pilot were the first to be identified. The twin-engine turboprop was headed for Sao Paulo with 58 passengers and four crew members aboard when it went down about 80 kilometers north of the city. Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
And the campaign of former U.S. President Donald Trump says that they were hacked.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump first posted about it Saturday on his Truth social media platform. The post read, "We were just informed by Microsoft Corporation that one of our many websites was hacked by the Iranian government. Iranian officials have rejected the accusations. The documents allegedly hacked reportedly included information about Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance. He appeared Sunday on several news shows, but questions focused on the presidential race." Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
The sun set on the Olympic Games in Paris Sunday. Reuters correspondent Chris Dignam with more.
The closing ceremony included performances by Billie Eilish, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Snoop Dogg, all music icons from California, in a nod to the next Summer Games host city of Los Angeles. Hollywood was also represented, with Tom Cruise performing a stunt worthy of Mission Impossible. L.A. Mayor Karen Bass became the first black woman mayor to receive the Olympic flag. She acknowledged Paris had set the bar high, but expressed confidence that her city would prove itself a worthy successor.
That's Reuters' Chris Dignam reporting. The French lawyer for Olympic boxing champion Imani Khalif has filed a legal complaint in France for online harassment. Khalif faced a rain of criticism and false claims about her sex during the Paris Olympics. She won gold Friday in the women's welterweight division, becoming a new hero in her native Algeria and bringing global attention to the women's boxing. The complaint was filed Friday with a special unit in the Paris prosecutor's office for combating online hate speech. It's now up to prosecutors to decide whether to open an investigation. The complaint does not name an alleged perpetrator. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
America, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Rwanda's president emphasizes regional peace in inauguration speech.
Peace in our region is a priority for Rwanda, yet it has been lacking, particularly in eastern DRC.
Malawi's president Chakwera is endorsed for 2025 election as analysts warn against early victory claims. Aid groups report alarming rates of violence in and around displacement camps in eastern DRC. Nigeria's million-person protest march ends amid low turnout. A Ugandan landslide kills dozens of people.
Yesterday, we had retrieved 14 dead bodies. Today, we have retrieved 4 so far, and this makes a total of 18.
And will the youth vote send Harris or Trump to the White House? Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Peace and security in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo were among the highlights of Rwandan President Paul Kagame during his fourth swearing-in ceremony on Saturday. The conflict in Eastern DRC has seen Rwanda's relations with its neighbors deteriorate over the last 2 years. Moses Habyarimana reports.
During his fourth inaugural address, Rwanda's President Paul Kagame emphasized the peace and security in the region as among his priorities.
The intersecting crises that define our region and our world continue to create uncertainty and distrust as a result of unaddressed inequalities and double standards. Peace in our region is a priority for Rwanda, yet it has been lacking, particularly in eastern DRC.
Last month, Rwanda and DRC signed a ceasefire agreement mediated by the president of Angola that came into effect on August 4th. The accord was reached by the Congolese army and the M23 rebel group, which DRC says is backed by Kigali. Rwanda's government spokesperson Yolande Makolo reaffirmed to VOA's James Batty that the ceasefire is the best chance for political solution to the conflict in the eastern DRC and peace in the region. Olivier Nduhungirehe is the Rwanda's Minister of Foreign Affairs.
We supported the U.S. negotiated humanitarian truce of 2 weeks and requested that it is extended indefinitely. And second, we considered that the only viable path to peace in Eastern DRC is through political dialogue.
George Odong is an East African Legislative Assembly member from Uganda.
So it's very clear from the experience of the region that you can't use violence to solve violence. You cannot use armed military confrontation as a means to resolve major political issues in the eastern DRC.
Many Congolese remain skeptical whether the truce will end the conflict in the eastern part of the country. Dr. Nkene Ntanda is a political analyst and a professor of political science at the University of Kinshasa.
Many dialogues have taken place, whether it is in Nairobi, whether it is in Kampala. Nothing positive has ever resulted from these dialogues. I don't expect anything beneficial for the DRC that will come from the dialogue. As long as the Democratic Republic of Congo is not able to organize herself and fight to defend her territory, nothing will change.
The DRC and Rwanda are expected to engage in regional mediated talks led by Kenya's former president Uhuru Kenyatta, despite uncertainty about their success. Moses Habyarimana for Daybreak Africa.
Alarming rates of violence, particularly sexual violence, in and around displacement camps near North Kivu's capital in Democratic Republic of Congo remain high, according to the aid group Doctors Without Borders, also known as Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF.
Camille Neal is the MSF Emergency Coordinator in Goma and tells BBC Tinidu Opor that mortality and morbidity are on the increase.
The epidemiological survey was on several factors like malnutrition for the children, violences, physical, psychological, and sexual violences for every people in the camps, but also other kind of diseases like diarrhea or even vaccination rate to see what was the main causes. And what we have seen is if some of the indicators are quite stable or even improving a bit in the camps, what is not reducing is the violences, physical one, psychological one, and sexual one, that are creating a very high rates of mortality and morbidity in the camps. 10% of the women we have interviewed during this survey, between 20 years old and 40 years old, said that they have been raped.
There have been back and forth as to what group is responsible for this spike, not just in violence, but also in sexual violence. Have you been able to identify which group is responsible?
Actually, it's an epidemiological survey when we are asking a various questions about what our people are facing in their daily life. We are in not, and it's not our job to identify the perpetrators. So it's not part of the survey we have conducted.
Are you getting as much help as you need?
So for now, MSF, we have 7 clinics all around the camps and all around Goma, from the northern part to the western part, where we try to provide comprehensive care, like primary health care, but also dedicated care for victims of sexual violences. That is the full package from prophylaxis and to safe abortion, and also, of course, all the psychological support for them. But what we lack, because the problem is the prevention part and how we manage to reduce the exposure of all these women and the children to these violences. And for this, we really need humanitarian aid to scale up and to really improve the living condition inside the camp and economic means for all these people.
That's Camille Neal, MSF's Emergency Coordinator in Goma, speaking with you, Tinidu Opor. The governing Malawi Congress Party, MCP, has endorsed its leader, Lazaro Chakwera, as his presidential candidate for next year's elections scheduled for September. The party made the announcement on Saturday at the close of its 3-day convention when it elected new members to its executive committee. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The MCP meeting elected 8 new office bearers for the party, as well as Chakwera, who faced no challenges. In his speech in the local language, Chichewa, Chakwera said he will win next year's polls. Malawi is expected to hold elections in September 2025 to choose representatives for all levels of government. He says what we are saying is that next year we are winning elections, whether they are presidential, parliamentary, and local government elections. MCP will not lose the elections. The declaration was received with a standing ovation from over 1,500 delegates to the convention. However, some political analysts say it is far too early for Chakwera to declare victory, given that other large political parties are yet to nominate their presidential candidates. George Piri is the former lecturer in political science at the University of Livingstonia in northern Malawi and commented on the predictions.
That's too early. Too early because you don't know whether you have the majority. Because in 2025, all the parties will contest. And because all the parties will contest, Malawians who know who they want are the ones who declare a winner.
However, Chakwera asked the newly elected executive committee members to work towards victory by strengthening the party structures, especially at the grassroots levels. Moses Kunkuyu is the party director for the campaign, who was re-elected during the party's convention. He told the state broadcaster, the Malawi Broadcasting Corporation, that the party is confident that he would again help the party win next year.
So if people feel I did a good job as a campaign director for the Malawi Congress prospered at a time when we had to usher the president and the party into government. And they feel that that same level of confidence still stands, and they feel that I can still have that capability to drive the party as part of the team into government again next year. And they give me that position again. It's a great sign of confidence, and I am happy with that.
President Chakwera came into power in 2020 after his party formed an alliance with the United Transformation Movement, UTM, led by the former state vice president, the late Saulos Chilima. The Tonse Alliance was instrumental in defeating former president Peter Mutharika of the Democratic Progressive Party in 2020. However, the UTM withdrew from the alliance with the MCP last month, citing what it says was the MCP's failure to abide by the terms and conditions of the alliance. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 12. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Nearly two dozen people have died after a landslide, including heaps of garbage, fell on houses in a Kampala suburb. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni offered condolences to the bereaved families and assured them government support. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakarinji has more from Kampala.
Kampala City Police spokesman Patrick Onyango confirmed about two dozen people were killed by the landslide and several others injured.
Yesterday, we had retrieved the 14 dead bodies, and today we have retrieved four so far, and this makes a total of 18, and all were taken to City Mortuary Mulago for postmortem before they are given to their relatives.
Onyango said, unfortunately, rescuers were able several retrieve fewer than 10 people and animals from the wreckage of a hill of garbage. Stezi, a Kampala suburb, is the dumping site for the garbage collected from the capital, Kampala. The city's mayor, Elias Lukwago, blamed the government for not doing enough to locate the dumping ground, saying the affected site was too close to city residents.
We have always been raising a red flag. We brought out all the facts which needed to be interrogated, and we made a clarion call that please, let's take action.
Lukwago is calling for a thorough investigation into the tragedy. Uganda President Yoweri Museveni lamented the incident. He expressed his condolences to the bereaved families on his social media account X, formerly Twitter, and said the government has already located another dumping site. Anne Muhigwe is the deputy head of the Inspectorate of Government, a body responsible for investigating fraud.
The president is concerned and has also directed us to ensure that the right we get the officers or officer who didn't do their work.
The Uganda Red Cross and other agencies are providing aid to the victims. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
In Nigeria, the grand finale of the End Bad Governance protest, which started on August 1st, ended on Saturday amid low turnout. Our reporter in Abuja has more.
Organizers of the protests against poor governance had said the march would signal the end of the 10-day protest against economic hardship. In preparation for the event, security agencies deployed operatives and roadblocks in cities and venues where the protesters intended to converge. One of the organizers, who is the convener of the Revolution Now movement and a former presidential candidate, Omoyele Sowore, speaks on the lower-than-expected turnout.
We have to admit that it's been 10 days of constant protesting across the country. So it's natural that fatigue might have set in some place, but I just want to let you know that it was successful to a large extent.
Sowore also said that obstacles placed in the way of protesters by the government discouraged them from turning out in large numbers. He said there are plans for another round of massive protests in October, which he compared to successful protests a few years ago to close a repressive police unit accused of violating human rights.
The plan is to give governments enough days to attend to the demands. 15 of them, they have 70 days to do that. And then upon completion of that period, there will be resumption of activities on October 1. Also, in October is the NSAS period. We're still having conversation as to why we should take the entire month of October for different kinds of activities to strengthen the NBAD governance revolt across Nigeria.
The NBAD governance protests were aimed at drawing attention to the plight of ordinary citizens under President Bola Tinubu's government. Security forces tear gassed the protesters as some hoodlums hijacked the demonstrations, looting and destroying property. Ezenwanwagwu, the chairman of the group Partners for Electoral Reform, noted that a lack of coordination marred the protests.
It was captioned Day of Rage. So in terms of unleashing anger, I think they were successful because of the reports of destructions that happened across the country. The organizers were not able to step forward to own the protests. This is democracy, and there are very clear ways of engaging in a democracy, which includes peaceful protests. But as you know, what happened was not a protest, it was a riot.
Wagu maintained that to be successful, the protests should be organized on the familiar platforms. Observers say the momentum of the protests slowed in Abuja and other parts of the country after security forces targeted leaders, arresting and shot at protesters. For VOA News from Abuja, Nigeria.
Turkey's foreign ministry says Horn of Africa rivals Somalia and Ethiopia will start a new series of talks in Ankara today, Monday, aiming to ease tensions between them. The ministry says in a statement that talks scheduled to start on September 2nd had been brought forward. With the youth vote sent Harris or Trump to the White House, organizers on both sides have seen a swell of voter enthusiasm and support, particularly among young voters. But the younger demographic has had a historically low turnout at the polls. Tina Fain explores whether that could change come November.
Growing share of U.S. voters are young people who could play a pivotal role in the general election this November, perhaps even helping to elect the first woman president in U.S. history. That is, if they turn out to vote. Rudy Garrett is vice president of capacity building at the Alliance for Youth Action, a national network of organizations promoting youth civic engagement.
The reasons why young people are a little bit more dubious about showing up this election cycle is directly tied to their frustration with how our current government is working. Young people are experiencing a lot of frustration because they're not seeing change happen at the speed in which they would like to see it happen in their communities.
But since Vice President Kamala Harris became the Democratic presidential nominee, there's been a notable shift in terms of excitement. Nika Hammad is Deputy Executive Director at Priorities USA, a Democratic political action committee.
The numbers with young voters in particular were great. On enthusiasm especially, we saw a 5 percentage point increase in young voters' intent to vote basically overnight.
19-year-old Celeste Galvez is one of those who's feeling energized by the change.
I was like not really planning on even voting in the first place, but now that he's dropped out and Kamala's running, I'm more like excited for like stepping into like a new world where like you can have a woman as the president. Like I'm actually excited about politics now.
The excitement has translated to a spike in new voter registrations. Vote.org reported over 100,000 people registering to vote in the 7 days after Joe Biden announced he was stepping down, with voters ages 18 to 34 making up nearly 85% of those new registrations. But the presidential race remains close, and there are equal numbers of young voters, particularly young men, who favor former President Donald Trump, the Republican presidential nominee. Again, Ahmed.
A lot of them don't find that the U.S. economy as a whole works for them. So when Democrats talk about, you know, record job growth, huge number of jobs that President Biden has created, they don't see themselves in that framework.
26-year-old Frankie Russell is one of them.
The way to get my age is that you got to talk to my age group. You can't be running the same low taxes, the claim of like, we just lower taxes, guns, and faith. I'm like, well, that's not enough. We need other stuff. You know, we need American first policy in general. You know, no new wars. Yeah, no sending our money overseas, but keeping it at home.
Here's Garrett again.
Frustration does not equal apathy. Young people actually understand what's happening in politics. They care about what's going on. They're just not seeing the change that they want to see be actuated through engaging in the electoral process. But I think that the switch up that has happened over the last couple of weeks has definitely created a new trajectory.
Whether that trajectory will extend to the ballot box remains to be seen. But it's clear that young voters should not be discounted come November. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the 2024 Paris Olympic Games, which was concluded on Sunday, 16 days after the opening ceremony. Kenya led the African continent podium finish with 4 gold medals, 2 silver and 5 bronze. The East African country got 2 gold medals through Beatrice Chibet in the 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters races. Emmanuel Wanyoyi also won gold in the 800 meters, while Faith Kipyegon set an Olympic record in the 1,500 meters race with a time of 3 minutes 51.29 seconds. Algeria came second on the African continent with 2 gold and a single silver medal. Kaila Namor won gold medal, making history by becoming the first African to win a medal in artistic gymnastics. The other gold was from boxing, where Imane Khelif won her bout in the women's 66 kilograms. South Africa was in third place on the medal list, with swimmer Tajana Smith winning 1 gold medal. They also won 3 silver and 2 bronze medals for a total of 6 medals. Ethiopia came in fourth on the African medal table with 1 gold medal in the men's marathon through Tamirat Tola and 3 silver medals. Egypt and Tunisia completed Africa's top 5, with Egyptian gold from Ahmed El Dendi in modern pentathlon, with both countries earning 1 silver and 1 bronze medal. Staying with the 2024 Paris Olympic Games, the Nigerian Minister of Sports Development, John Eno, has issued an apology to Nigerians over the poor outing of the Nigerian team to the Olympic Games. Nigerian President Bola Ahmed Tinubu had approved over $7.6 million for the country's outing at the Olympics and the Paralympics. $5.7 million was earmarked for the Olympics, while $1.9 million was budgeted for the Paralympics. Despite the funding, Nigeria had ended the games without a medal. Apologizing to Nigerians in a statement on Sunday, the Minister of Youth and Sports said the team had fallen short of expectations. Meanwhile, Congolese sprinter Dominic Lasconi Mulamba has been provisionally suspended after testing positive for a banned substance, the International Testing Agency said on Sunday, days after he competed in the Olympic 100 meters in Paris. Mulamba got through the preliminaries with a time of 10.54 seconds, but went out in round 1 on August the 3rd when he finished 7th in 10.53 seconds. The positive sample was collected a day later in Paris, according to the ITA. He has the right to challenge a provisional suspension before the Court of Arbitration for Sport and can request an analysis of his B sample. African Games boxing champion Cynthia Ogunsimilore of Nigeria also tested positive earlier on at the 2024 Paris Olympics. And that's it for this bonus edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, August 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.